The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two, a numbers game here on VSiN. Matt Brown in for Gil Alexander, at least for 1.5 more days. I'm here for one more hour and then a full show tomorrow.
Exactly.
Out of here on Friday. That being said, I guess you can break everyone's heart and you also out of here on Friday.
Yeah, we are both out here on Friday. Scott Seidenberg will be holding things down.
Yeah. So it's,
no,
if you want this duo, you better tune in tomorrow because that's the last you're getting of it here.
That's right. Yeah.
Come on
in. I don't know why you said at least, like at most you're here for the next day and a half. Who knows? Someone might change their mind after today's show.
This is very true. I could be done after the next segment, for all I know. But it's not my show, you know, so I could be done after the next show. They come in. It's like the big, like, that you get the horn and, like, the big hook, and they just drag me off stage like I'm at the Apollo.
I'm just
going to
shoot
that.
One text message, man. Actually, maybe more than that. More than that.
Dunzo. Get him on out of here. Bring someone from the back. Pinch hitter. Bring in the lefty.
Rob Moreno. You know?
Yeah.
Bobby Knuckles.
Mid reliever. Bring in the lefty. Somebody sit in for me. All right, Chris Felica going to join us here and talk all things Belmont. Going to get into some college football with him as well. I'm going to put him on the spot. I know that wasn't part of the gig here, Kelly, but going to put Chris on the spot, get his opinion on some of these quarterbacks as we enter the season here. But let's start off with the Belmont. Chris, how excited are you for this one?
I am, and there is no Triple Crown on the line, but it's the first time in a dozen years you've got the first three finishers from the Kentucky Derby running in the Belmont, and the Saratoga racetrack is one of my favorite places in the country. Growing up in the Northeast, it was really, really cool last year to have the Belmont in that festival of racing, which begins today, as I'm sure your good friend Mike Somich will let you know. So we are racing today, tomorrow, Friday, and Saturday, capped off by the Belmont. So I am excited. But did you guys bury the lead there? You guys headed out early for the weekend. Is that a little spoiler for a long shots live from Oakmont next week?
Oh, wouldn't that be fantastic? Hey,
yeah, that would be great, Chris.
If you want to drop send some emails or something, buddy. You know, if you want to get on.
I'm just going to throw it out there. I'll make it happen. I'll just throw it out there that you guys are doing it. And we'll let management.
Yeah, I mean, we do have people going to the College World Series, so I mean, you know, maybe they could send us on the road.
It would make sense.
You know,
it would make sense. No, I'm taking off Friday because Ludacris is in town, Chris. So that makes a lot more sense, right?
and it's not even that he's going to the show; just going to go hang with him. Like Kelly and Ludo go way back, apparently.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, way back in the day. Of course, catch Chris over on Fox Sports, the Bear Bets podcast, and at Chris Felica on the Twitter machine as well. So you talk about the track there, Chris, and you know, so there are going to be some people who are tuning in right now that don't know the difference between this and any of the other races that are going on. So what does Belmont bring differently to the table than what we've seen so far?
Well, typically the Belmont Stakes, the third race of the Triple Crown, is the longest at 1.5 miles, usually run at Belmont Park. The Kentucky Derby is 1.25 miles. The Preakness Stakes is a little bit short, 1.3 miles. And now you're looking at a Belmont Stakes up at Saratoga at the classic distance of 1.25 miles, which I think is pretty good because the 1.5 mile race in the Belmont is really a distance that only exists for the purpose of the Belmont Stakes and the Triple Crown. There's only one other graded stakes race, I believe, that is run at 1.5 miles. So the fact that it's going to be 1.25 miles, the same distance as the Derby, it's a bit more of a truer test of racing. So and it can play both ways. It can play to speed horses. It can play to stalkers. It can play to closers. So it's a very fair distance and a very good test as to who ultimately will potentially win the best two out of three here between Sovereignty and Journalism.
Chris, given the length and then size of the field that we're dealing with this week, how do you go about betting a race like this? Is it completely different than when you're betting a race with 17 horses when it comes to, you know, trifectas and stuff like that you're betting?
It is a little bit different. And I think the main difference is in the quality at the top of the field as opposed to the depth of the field. You've got the Derby winner, Sovereignty. You've got the Preakness winner, Journalism. You've got Baeza, who is third in the Derby. It's very unlikely someone other than one of those three horses is going to win. So the way I'm going to approach the race and the way I handicap a race like this is I'm going to have to just take a shot with one of these horses, stand firm, that's my pick, and maybe try and get the other one out of the trifecta. Maybe you get Hill Road in there for a spot in the trifecta. Maybe Rodriguez hangs on for a spot in the trifecta. So if you can pick the winner of those three horses that you like, and then maybe throw one of those horses out of the trifecta for third, that's probably the way to go. But I like journalism in this race of the three horses. I think the fact that he is the most versatile of the horses, I think the fact that he came out of the prick is obviously in great shape. That was an unbelievable win that he had. I was a little surprised he came out of it so well, but he looked so good on the track. And I think maybe in the Derby, he might have been a combination of moving a little too soon, hitting the front a little too soon, and then Sovereignty really pointing towards that race. So if you're asking me to pick between those two, Sovereignty and Journalism, I do think Journalism at this distance on this track with this potential pace scenario of not a super fast pace up front, I do think Journalism has the edge on Saturday.
Chris, I'm glad you brought up the trifecta angle. We know everybody wants to bet a little to win a lot in these type of races. And so you're going to have the people come in and they're going to throw in Heart of Honor or Uncaged or whatever it might be, those big numbers like that. But this race a little bit different from the Derby because there is a little bit more variance with the 20 horses and what kind of start do you get and can you maneuver through the giant pack? And with only 8 horses, and correct me if I'm wrong here, it actually does some of the longer shots a disservice, right? Because it actually does favor the horses that are just better, right? It takes some of the variance out.
Absolutely. If you're leveling, evening out the playing field and taking some of the potential risk and traffic difficulties out, odds are the better horses in the race are going to be there. The Crudo, a newcomer to the Triple Crown Trail, owned by Bobby Flay, he's going to be on the lead, but I don't think he classes up. The horse Rodriguez, Bob Baffert's horse, scratched out of the Derby due to a foot issue. He is back. He potentially could fall into a spot where he maybe inherits the lead, but is he good enough to beat Journalism? Is he good enough to beat Sovereignty? I don't know. The horse in the race that seems to be the now horse is Baeza. And you need to take kind of I think there's two different approaches that you can take with Baeza. I think you can take the approach that he has the most upside of any of these horses in the race, being that he's only raced 5 times and he's finished second out in the Santa Anita Derby. He ran third in the Kentucky Derby. He can improve off the 5-week layoff and potentially get his picture taken in the winner's circle. Or you can take the point of view that, okay, he was 15-1 in a maiden race at Santa Anita against Rodriguez, and he wasn't within 10 lengths of Rodriguez that day. You can take the point of view that he was 14-1 in the Santa Anita Derby and couldn't hold off Journalism, and Journalism went by despite having a terrible trip. And then you've got the opinion of, okay, he was 15-1 or whatever it was in the Kentucky Derby, and he couldn't beat either Journalism or Sovereignty. So like why would you bet him on Saturday at 4-1 or so with like a third of the odds that he was in those races? So it depends on whether you're a glass half empty, a glass half full guy on base. I tend to lean towards fading him and trying to keep him out of the try.
Chris, anything now that I know we're a few days out still, so anything in the fixed odds markets that you think is worth betting now? And if not, is there what are you going to be waiting on? Is it Journalism waiting on that to make that bet?
Well, I saw some plus 175 out there on Journalism in the fixed market. That was I don't know if that was prior to the morning line getting posted or not. And 8-5 was 160. So if you can get 175 in a fixed market on Journalism, I would suggest you do that. Because I don't think he's going to drift up to 9-5 or so. I think 8-5 is probably where he stays. I think Sovereignty probably takes a little bit of money, and I think Baeza takes a little bit of money. So I don't know how much Journalism is going to drift up in this race, though. I don't think there's really anyone at a fixed price. I don't think you're going to see too much fluctuation in the field.
I've got Chris Felica here. I'm not going to let you get out of here without some college football questions. So I got to get a couple in for you, buddy, here. And we look at the Heisman market, and Arch Manning is your short shot in the Heisman market, Chris. And, you know, we have a very small sample size of Arch Manning. Of course, we know the family, and we did see a little bit of him at Texas, but we don't have a lot to go with here. And we are just really going on narrative and feel and pedigree and all of that. Is he the rightful short shot? Or, I mean, should it be Klubnik or Nussmeier or somebody, Al or somebody else?
No, I don't think he should be the short shot at all. I mean, I don't know how you could possibly bet him at the price that he is. I mean, now, of course, I say that, and if they go into Columbus week one and win, he's probably going to take a little bit more money and his price is going to come down. But you put it great. Like, we don't know, other than the fact that his name is Arch Manning, we haven't seen a ton of them. We don't know with the losses that they have on that team, the schedule in the SEC. Like, is he going to be what we think that he could be? Now, by all reports, he's done The team loves him, and he's a natural leader. But again, what happens, say, you brought up Klubnik, you brought up Nussmeier. That game is massive, that opening week game between Clemson and LSU. I don't know if Cade Klubnik can win the Heisman if Clemson loses to LSU, because what other opportunity are they really going to get to really give him a marquee? Winning the ACC, I don't think, is something that voters are going to say, okay, we got to give it to Cade Klubnik now. Where on the flip side, if LSU goes up there and they lose a close game and LSU winds up winning the SEC and they beat Bama and they beat Georgia and win all those other games against that schedule, he still has a path to win the Heisman Trophy. So if you like Klubnik, then I think you probably have to bet him now and hope that he wins that game, because if he does win that game, that price is going to go down. Well, whereas if you like Nussmeier, maybe you wait a little bit, because there probably is a loss or two on that LSU schedule and they probably could still find their way to Atlanta for the SEC title game. The guy that I did bet at 25-1 was Carson Beck. And I know people are going to say, oh, Miami homer or whatever, but 2 years ago, he had an unbelievable year. Last year, injuries all up over the offensive line, wide receivers. And so he was injured as well. A ton of drop passes amongst that receiving core. Like, he's going to be in an offense that had the Heisman runner-up or third place finisher last year in Cam Ward. He's got a great shot to bounce back, and if they can beat Notre Dame week one, they have a really good chance of putting up a 10-2, 11-1 type season, and themselves get to Charlotte for the ACC title.
He is Chris Felica, Fox Sports, the Bear Bets podcast, at Chris Felica over on the Twitter. Thanks so much for time. I'm glad I asked the question, buddy, and good luck on everything this weekend.
Absolutely. Take care, guys. Have a great weekend.
When we come back, let's go country club and talk a little golf.
Numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It is VSiN. It is VSiN here on a Wednesday. Matt Brown, Kelly Bidlin. Kelly, we have gotten through the UFC, gotten through hockey, gotten through the Belmont already.
A lot, man. Big weekend.
We've gotten through a ton of stuff. Well, you know what it's time for?
Oh, I do.
Time to go country clubbing.
Hit the club.
Grandfather's uncle.
That's right. His whole family.
Yeah.
There.
That's actually wow. All that is.
That's like some glow sticks in the back now. That was impressive. Dude.
All that was just Ben's family.
Just a Wilson and family.
And you know what that is? That's just a Tuesday for them. Like, that's just what they do on a Tuesday. Wait till you see what happens on a Friday and Saturday.
The early bird specials on Tuesday.
In the east wing of their compound down there in San Diego.
Oh, Betty.
I mean, they've got the compound up in. They got the compound up in Wisconsin, the compound over in San Diego.
Do they still have Wisconsin?
No,
they're just San Diego.
Oh, no, 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 no.
All right.
No. The parents, they're all over. They're world travelers.
They
globetrotting.
Actually, in all seriousness, I need a commission check from Ben Wilson, because I keep help finding him tenants for his place in Las Vegas. I've been two in a row. I've hit two in a row now.
Well, he owes you a drink then.
Yeah, he owes me at least one drink.
Let's go. Let's do that. So we are heading to the RBC Canadian Open here in this one, fellas. This is a course we've never seen before, so handicapping can always be tricky. Kelly and I rely a lot on data. There are a lot of feel handicappers out there. So, like, I'm not sitting here saying that that's the wrong way to go about things. It's just not the way that I go about things.
Sure.
Right? And so you and I tend to really rely heavily on data, on numbers that get blended together and come out and spit a result out, and then maybe we do a little bit more research to say, oh, that is where this leads me and all that. Well, it's tough to do, of course, we've never seen, and we don't really know how it's going to play, because on paper, there are things that could lead you to maybe this course plays easy and they score really, really well here. There are other things that lead you to believe that maybe the length of this thing could make the scores a little bit more depressed. And so going about how you put together a betting card is at least somewhat interesting. And you and I actually did kind of go about it a little bit differently.
Yeah, we did. I think this is worth bringing up, though. I you're right. We rely on a lot of data. So new courses are a little bit different challenge. It's fun. I enjoy the process of scouting out a new course and researching what do I think's going to matter more so than other statistics and stuff like that. It's fun. I do dial back the betting size a little bit on newer courses just because I don't know, but it is worth bringing up. When you don't know and you don't have any experience on a past course, guess what? The bookmakers don't know either. So you have just as much advantage over them as you do on every other week. So possibly even more on a course that you haven't seen before.
TPC Toronto is where we are headed this week. It's a full field event. 65 and ties are going to move on. And, you know, Kelly, they have it set up as a par 70. That's typically, if you and I go play, it's going to be a 72. But yeah. There's a par 70. It's a pretty long par 70 with all of that. That being said, from the best I can tell in the intel that you're getting from the people that know it, they expect these guys to be able to score on this course. Yep. And so that's kind of how I went about my handicap this week. And if it doesn't go how I think, then I'm going to have probably a pretty terrible week because I skipped the whole top of the odds board this week because we talk about this a ton on long shots. And I'm sure you say it here on the program when I'm not around, but the thing that really separates these golfers on tour is the course itself. Every single golfer on the PGA Tour is the best golfer you've ever seen in your life. If they came and played with you and three buddies, your jaw would drop. You would be like, this isn't even any fun because they're playing from the tips and they're still out driving you by 30 yards every single time. And all this, like, they are the best golfer you've ever seen ever. I have a guy that is in this field this week that I don't play with regularly, but like, on occasion, like Joseph Bramlett is he playing this week? Yeah.
Okay.
He's a late addition to the field. But
you've played with him a couple times. Yeah. And so, gushed about it.
Well, what I'm saying is like, he's not a top 50 dude in the world. You know, he's not even top 75 guy in the world, you know, but you go watch him play golf and you're like, how is this guy not the number one player in the world? You know what I'm saying? Like, because you're just like, because the game is just so completely different. The thing that separates is the course. Well, that's why I went, if it's going to be easy scoring conditions, then any of these dudes might be able to pop off. And so I went further down the board. You, on the other hand, did stay top heavy and actually put in a bet on Rory this week.
Yes, I did. I did go Rory, and that was more so about just the lack of trust that I have in kind of the few names that are below him. And you've heard me say it a lot on this show, on Long Shots, new episode out now. Go check that out, YouTube or wherever you get your podcast. Reminder, all the VEASAN shows you can find in podcast form as well. Matt, it's just, we've talked about this before, every major, and it's played out so far in the PGA and the Masters. And it's going to be much of my approach, I think, again next week in the US Open, where Scottie Scheffler, Rory, and Bryson DeChambeau have had special seasons in their own right. And yes, there might be a little concern about where Rory's at right now, where Bryson's at compared to Scottie Scheffler, who's only continuing to play better and better. But those guys have at least put it all together and all together consistently this year, where I think the names, where you start to go down the board, it's okay, question mark, question mark, question mark. You don't have... Even going back to last year, I think the consistent play that you saw out of a Xander Schauffele, out of a Colin Morikawa, right? You're just not battling with that right now. And for this event, I entered it with no plans to bet Rory McIlroy. I'm not really the biggest Rory McIlroy backer on the planet. It's really not a guy I bet too often, honestly. But that, how I course scouting, how I think this is going to play, and I think off the tee is going to matter a ton here. We've got wide open fairways. There are some fairway bunkers. We talked a lot about this on Long Shots. There are some fairway bunkers that I'm interested to see how much they impact the off the tee play, but Rory's going to be able to go out there and bomb it onto these fairways that are pretty wide. And then you're talking about mid-long iron play that's going to be important into these greens. And from what we can tell, fairly easy green setup. So there's some guys that I like further down the board, but from an outright perspective, when I was kind of building the outright card, it was Rory who I started with. And I thought 5-1, I didn't think it were unfair odds compared to the rest of the field and who's actually.
Well, he's certainly the class of the field. There's no doubt about that. There's no Scottie Scheffler. There's no Xander. You know, he's definitely the class of the field. You and I both end up on the same guy for your only other outright that you have in Luke Clanton. Mm-hmm. Luke Clanton is a guy that if you follow the golf world, you know the name. If you don't, he's a guy that is a very, very decorated amateur. He earned his tour card. This will be his first official. He's going to get paid finally to play golf.
Yeah.
So he's getting paid. Now, is he going to get paid in Canadian, or is he gonna, like?
Ooh, this, good question.
How's this going to work? Is he getting his first paycheck in loonies and toonies?
What's the conversion rate right now?
Yeah, I mean, his first paycheck's coming in loonies and toonies.
I got to figure that out. I'm going to Montreal next month.
But you and I both went with Clanton, and honestly, it's just because he lit up the model. I mean, like, you put in what you love in this, in the model, and you start to see, like, off the tee, he's fifth in this field over the last 32 rounds. You see that he is fifth in this field in strokes gained on par fours, which, as you can see from a par 70, that means it's a couple extra par fours since you're taking away two of the par fives. And he's fifth in this field in that as well, Kelly. He's long off the tee, so averaging 310 off the tee. So plenty of distance, if we believe that distance is going to play a factor. And, you know, for me, at 40, I got 43 here in town. I know it's widely available at 40 rest of country at the national books. If this course plays easy, if this course plays in good scoring conditions, he has the game that can go out and go low.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I think we're just still waiting. We're waiting to see it completely translate over to the PGA Tour. He had more starts last year, only five starts on the PGA Tour this year. He's got two top 18 finishes and then two missed cuts. So it's been a little bit of a mixed bag. But yeah, in a weaker field, you said it. I mean, it's kind of the same thing with Rory, though, but I think this is a course that sets up very nicely for him to go out there in his, you know, first event as a pro, to go out there and play well. So, yeah, I took a shot at him as an outright as well this week.
Yeah. Only three other outrights for me, so we share that one. And like I said, I started middle of the board and went down. Alex Smalley, John Kiefer, and Chris Goddard are the only other three outrights that I have on my card this week. You probably never heard of John Kiefer, a guy that is a younger player that has been playing very, very well over on the Korn Ferry Tour. He is qualified to play in this thing. And so if you go in, really, really, really great finishes on the Korn Ferry this year. So at 75-1, I thought it was interesting. Chris Goddard was as high as fourth in some of the models that I ran this week. And so anytime a guy's that high and then an 80-1 is attached to their name, that's pretty much going to equal a bet for me almost every single time, right? Like, I'm obviously missing something that the model is picking up. And so, again, there's just so much discrepancy there in that one. And of course, you have some placement market stuff. I have some first round leader stuff. I have some placement market things as well. Head on over to VSiN.com/picks. Look at the picks page. You'll be able to see all of those over there. But it's a, you know, Kelly, for me, it's a tournament in which I'm not investing as much as I normally do. And I don't think you are either.
No, I'm not. I do think it's always worth repeating too, of the, hey, it's a week before a major. If you bet golf, you're going to bet a lot during the U.S. Open next week. Save the money. There's nothing wrong with that for saving it for next week.
Guys, Edge Boost is first ever bank account built for bettors out there. It ensures all gambling transactions are approved. No usage fees, no minimums. You can earn cash back as well. 100% approval for all betting deposits. Edgeboost.bet, promo code ANG, deposit $25, and Edgeboost will match that deposit. Edgeboost.bet.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Numbers game rolls on here on a Wednesday. Matt Brown, Kelly Bidlin. We will soon be joined by our very own Jonathan Von Tobel. But a reminder, if you want to bet the ponies out there, First Bet is the place to do it. FirstBet.com, 1STBET.com/VSiN. Use the promo code VSiN200. And when you do, you can get up to $200 in bonuses out there. Again, you can make the bets in the app. You can watch the races right there in the app as well. We got the Belmont this weekend, so do not wait. FirstBet.com/VSiN, promo code VSiN200. Now here joining us on the desk, so kind to come in early before a full 2-hour shift, just like we're about to put in, Jonathan Von Tobel. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. Hello, America. I feel great. I saw Mission Impossible yesterday. The finals start tomorrow. What better time to be alive than now?
What's the name of this Mission Impossible?
The Final Reckoning.
Oh, okay. So they let you know this is it. We're not rolling out the 70-year-old actor.
And then there's not spoilers, America, but there's a great point where somebody says to Ethan Hunt, "This is your final reckoning." It's like, oh, he said the thing.
Old school Bond stuff where they would like always like work in the cheesy stuff. And you're like, ah, I see what you did right there.
I'm going to go hot take right away. Mission Impossible movies are all a little overrated to me. Give me Fast and the Furious over Mission Impossible.
Ooh, now that's hot. That's very hot.
Ortega's losing his mind back there, probably.
As we stated in the Hardwood Handicappers group chat, rest in peace. Mission Impossible's 4 to 7, I think, are like the best ones. If you're taking the franchise in totality, there's some shaky ones, but like Ghost Protocol on is very good.
Okay.
We will talk basketball here in just a second, but Tom Cruise's best role ever was actually in Tropic Thunder.
Yes.
Oh yeah, I don't know if anybody can disagree with that.
That was one of the few movies where I did not know that was him until the credits at the end, and then they show him with his name next to him. I was like, holy, I didn't realize that.
That was an unbelievable performance with him. But yes, we are going to talk basketball with our NBA expert, Jonathan Von Tobel, here. And JVT, it's -700, right, in favor of the Thunder, 5-1-ish out there on the Pacers. Let's say you had infinite money. Is this priced correctly, and would you then be laying 700 with the Thunder?
No, I think it's like a skosh too high, right? Like, I was expecting more in the range of like -600 or something like that. You know, I think I told you guys on Ready Set Bet over the weekend, I see -700 and I see a book that doesn't want any Thunder money, like just general pile up. And obviously that derives then into the other markets too, right? A public bettor is going to look at like -2.5 games and go, I got like $130. Like, nah, I don't want to do that. So I think this is a price that is repelling any Thunder money. So if I did have infinite money, I still wouldn't really be running to lay -700 with OKC at all.
All right, we'll stick with series first, and then we'll get to game one. We're seeing some game one movement a little bit. How did you go about attacking this? Are you side, total? What bets did you end up settling on?
Sure. For the series, just the result of the series, because I do have some player props for the series as well. What I did was two things. Just bet series to go 5 games, right? So that's about 2-1. It kind of removes, like, essentially what I'm thinking is they're going to win the first 2 games, take one of the games in Indiana, and then, of course, close this thing back out in Oklahoma City in 5. I also did play exact results. So I have the gentleman sweep. So Thunder up 3-0. Pacers win game 4, and then Thunder win game 5. So Thunder, 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 Pacers, Thunder. +625.
You played that exact series of games.
So I played both. Okay. So I played series the last 5 games, and then I played the exact result as well. In the gentleman sweep too, just to have some fun to like get a long shot to play.
I was considering doing that, but actually going the Pacers game 3, which I'm guessing is a little bit shorter than what you bet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's exactly the same. So, and I think one of the things that I think is going to work for me too is like the game 3 is going to be so fascinating. If they're going to be up 2-0 Oklahoma City, I'd venture a guess that despite the fact we're looking at them as 9-point favorites here, they're probably going to be like a 1.5-point underdog for game 3, just because that's the way the market factors in those team down 2-0 going back home. We'll see exactly what it is.
That's a good call.
You know what I'm saying? So the game 3 is going to be pretty fascinating to see where it's priced, to where the Pacers ultimately come out. But I really believe in Oklahoma City. I think there's some things you can point to. It ties into some of these player props that I'm going to talk about here, that you can look at the Pacers and say, like, historic victories, certain statistical anomalies where you're like, man, like, not that they're lucky to be here, but holy smokes, have they pulled the rabbit out of the hat multiple times in this run to get to this point. But still, I think two things should be true. Also, the most deserving team coming out of the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, just so I could have a sweat as well. I bet that we found yesterday one of these markets, and it just takes the number down so dramatically. If I actually think it's going to play out this way, you can play Thunder undefeated at home at -120.
That's what Storm was talking about yesterday. I thought that was a very good one too. They've been unreal.
It's just one of those things, like we found as we were digging around yesterday, we're like, how can we play this alternatively just to be able to get some sort of sweat with all of that? But let's head to game number one, in which 9.5 everywhere except DraftKings. So DraftKings is at 9. 9.5 everywhere else except for DraftKings. The total sitting 231, 231.5. What do you expect to see in game number one?
I think the Thunder are going to be ripping and ready to go. And I think that this is going to be a game where it's going to be, to me, sidewise Thunder or pass. And we've already moved here. So, you know, maybe just hold out. Like, these big numbers and these teams and basketball in general, you're probably going to be able to get under 9.5 once that game tips. If Indiana comes out and hits like 2 threes, like, you're going to be in a position to get that. I feel more strongly about the total. I bet this over 229.5. Like you mentioned, we're starting to see that creep up. You'll probably get some buyback. You said, is it up 231.5?
We're at 231.5.
Because I think what's going to be interesting, and I still think 230.5 is playable as well, the Thunder are going to be more than willing to play Indiana's pace. That they're going to, they're able to run up and down the floor. They're able to get after these guys. When they get steals, they run back in the other direction to get those easy buckets. I think this is going to be a relatively quick pace in comparison, especially with what the Pacers just played. If you look at that series against New York in totality, that was actually a Knicks series in terms of pace outside of a couple of games. Hell, even game one in overtime only had 106 possessions. So, like, that was a pretty slow pace overall. But I think this is going to speed up. I think the Thunder are going to let this Pacers team play the way they want because I think they're comfortable in playing in chaos as well. So I feel more strongly about these games going over, especially at the beginning if you're getting that 229.5, 230.5.
All right, let's go real geeky basketball for a bit, especially since I talked about the Knicks for 6 minutes at the beginning of the show. So real geeky basketball. How does this series end up playing out as far as we know how versatile the Thunder are? What are they going to look to attack on the Indiana side? Who gets played off the court perhaps with some of the players that we're going to see? Who's more of a factor in this series than what maybe we've seen in series past?
So I'll go pessimistic first because my angle coming into the series, and I've been texting you guys angrily, I've been trying to find Isaiah Hartenstein props so I can bet under for the series. Mm-hmm. I don't think Isaiah Hartenstein has a place in this series for the Oklahoma City Thunder. We've seen his minutes diminish in the last three games of that series against the Minnesota Timberwolves. If you look statistically in the postseason, when Hartenstein and Chet are on the floor together, the offense just isn't there. They're not particularly great on the end of the floor. They're great on defense. They're just not good on offense. And you don't need to go big against Indiana. You don't need to play both of your bigs. Their starting center average is less than 5 rebounds per game in this postseason. Like, they don't need to do it. Your top two rebounders are Pascal Siakam and Tyrese Halliburton. So you can play a single big like Chet Holmgren, feel comfortable doing it, and then go to some of your small ball lineups. And again, feel comfortable with it. So I think Isaiah Hartenstein is a guy that is going to get played out in this series. I'm looking to play his unders to start the series, and I'm looking for some series long stuff. Last year, they had so many different markets, like rebounds per game for the series, things like that, head to heads. I'm trying to find Hartenstein's stuff, but I can't really find it getting posted anywhere. As far as what they're going to attack, I think it ties in actually one of my series props that I have too. I am going to be very fascinated to see what the assist opportunities are going to be like for Tyrese Halliburton. He is incredible in terms of facilitating his team. Obviously, league leader in the postseason in terms of total assists. He's floating around like 152 through 16 games now in the playoffs. But if you look at who the Thunder have played in the three teams that they have played, Memphis, Minnesota, and Denver, all three of their assist-to-pass ratios or assist-to-pass rate have dropped dramatically in their series against OKC. Denver being the biggest one, right? Denver led the league in the regular season in assist-to-pass rate. It was at 10.4%. It was just 7% in the series against OKC. So in other words, they're cutting off. They're staying at home. They're cutting off assist opportunities. They're not allowing guys to move the ball around. So I think that's how they're going to really start to do this is they're going to make Tyrese Halliburton into either a useless passer or go ahead and outscore us, dude, if you can actually do that. And I don't think that's going to be the case. So that led me to, by the way, I bet Shai Gilgeous-Alexander to lead the series in assists at 5-1. Put a little bit on Jalen Williams at 66-1 as well to lead the series in assists. I think Halliburton is mispriced being that big of a favorite at minus 900. You've seen a team cut off the opportunities for facilitation for these other opponents. I don't think why that would be any different here. And the sneaky quick note, because I mentioned this to you guys, if you look at the numbers for Indiana in terms of wide open attempts, they're actually doing a great job in limiting uncontested looks in this postseason, but opponents are shooting just 34% on wide open attempts against Indiana throughout this postseason. If water finds its level, the assist opportunities are going to be more plentiful for Oklahoma City, which leads me again to the two stars.
Well, and even the Thunder shooting is bad. The shooting luck, if we're going to go there, right? Indiana's been a little bit on the high side. Thunder's been a little bit on the low side. I joined you actually on that Shai bet today. I think that's...
Shai for sure is good at 5-1.
Yeah, 5-1, I think it's a good bet, especially if we're talking a shorter series, right? You get more value at some of these longer shots if we're talking a shorter series.
I'm only allowing you one time to put in your final prediction, and it is the Thunder win in X amount of games.
Thunder in five.
Five?
Yes, that would be my official selection.
There it is. Why are you grinning?
No, it's me too, but it's like, boy, the conversation board at this point is like, okay, are you closer to a sweep or six?
I'd be closer to six just because how bad the Thunder played on the road.
Okay.
Like, they have really shown an inability. They haven't covered a road game. So why would I believe that they're going to be able to sweep?
The other part that, like, I just can't, like, we can't quantify. We're talking about shooting luck, right? The Pacers have had that magic beans essence to them all playoffs, right? Yeah. Like, they're winning games in ways that you can't fully explain. So, you could give them maybe a half a game for that.
He is Jonathan Von Tobel, co-host of Money Moves. You can catch him here in about 15 minutes. So be sure and stick around at MeJBT over on the Twitter machine. Thank you, buddy, for stopping by.
Thanks for having me, guys.
We're going to put a bow on this one when we come back.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Final segment, a numbers game here on a Wednesday. Matt Brown in for Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin on the desk, and we have packed it all in today.
Yeah, we have.
punch face, ice soccer, animal NASCAR.
Keep going.
And then peach box throwing.
Peach box throwing.
I mean, I had to think of something.
Peach basket.
Peach basket. Peach basket, peach throwing. Box, whatever. They're throwing it at the peach basket box.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Whatever.
But yeah, you're making it sound like you're taking a peach basket and throwing it, though.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Peach has got to find the basket.
Yes.
That's what we just talked about.
We'll figure it out at some point. Man, we were so good. The other three so good, and then there's just not a good one for basketball.
No. Not nearly as good.
Whatever. We'll call it hoop ball. We'll do whatever it is. But we're going to run through here in just a second all the bets that we've got going on out there. But, Kelly, it is interesting, though, to me. Everyone we've talked to, everyone I've talked to, I'm sure everyone you've talked to, no one has made a compelling case for the Pacers.
Yeah.
Not one single person out there. Have you talked to any single person that has made a compelling case for the Pacers?
No.
Yeah.
No. I the one thing that has kind of surprised me, and the Knicks, I guess, are sort of to blame for this, but man, it doesn't surprise me what we've heard from bettors from that standpoint. I'm a little surprised there doesn't seem to be more of a average Joe kind of pushing for the Pacers in this series. I don't feel like I've heard much of that. But man, they've had some magical games and magical finishes in this playoffs. That's why I brought it up with JVT. I think that's why I would lean more towards six than this being a sweep too. It's just because of that, man. Like, there's something with this team right now that I'm not going to sit here and say if it was one game. We talk about this all the time, right? With the Super Bowl compared to some of these seven game series. If it was one game, like this would be a far different conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just I want to, and you know, I think that there are going to be between now and the time this thing tips off tomorrow night, there will be someone who takes the contrarian take just for the clicks and right. just for the views. And is going to sit there and try and tell you just incredibly how live the Pacers really are and how they actually really love. And it's like, I don't think if you've watched NBA this season, I don't think if you watch these two teams and if you believe in statistics and you go in and just see how much of a step up this is from a defensive perspective that the Thunder bring to the table and all of that, I don't think you can give a strong opinion for the series and then winning the championship. Now, like you said, if you want to sit here and talk to me about when we head back to Indiana and then maybe winning game three, then let's have a conversation.
Yeah.
Right. But don't sit there and like take the contrarian side of this just for taking the contrarian side of this and for the clicks and for the views, because you can't really mean what you're saying, because there's a reason it's priced at -700, Kelly. Mm-hmm. And it is because the Thunder are a much better team than the Pacers are. Sports are weird and weird things can happen, but you can't sit here and try and tell me that you really believe that they're going to win the series.
Yeah, the other one, and you know, JVT just said it. I've heard a couple other people say. I actually think the series price is about exactly on, Matt. Yeah. I really don't. I actually don't think that there were, making the push for the book to not take Thunder money. And yes, I'm sure the futures liability is much more on the Thunder for the books. So maybe there's some of that. But as far as how I price it, it's right about where at -700. That's how I have this series price. So I think it's fair. I think it's fair. And look, if you want to go, if you've got the money to lay, like, I don't think it's bad. I did it against Denver. It got sweaty. I laid -650 or whatever with the Thunder against Denver. It got sweaty. But I don't think it's a bad bet to make. I do think it's interesting to see, like, I'm excited to see how this plays out, because I do think the Thunder are so versatile that JVT talked about it. I do think we're going to see Hartenstein a little bit more off the court. I think we're going to see them go smaller. I don't think the Pacers necessarily have a problem with that. We are talking about, this is the changing landscape of the NBA. It is, with how much tighter the salary cap has gotten, how much more important that has become, these teams with depth are going to matter that much more going forward. And when you have reliable bench players that you can turn to, that both of these teams have, I think that gives these teams a bit of an advantage going forward. And it's going to be fun seeing both of these teams trying to attack each other, because I think they're going to try to do it in different ways.
Kelly, being a morning show, don't often have live sports going on, but we did see Coco Gauff take care of Madison Keys in three sets after Maddie took the first one in a tiebreaker, but 6-4, 6-1 in set two and three. And then Louise Boissois gets it done. Nobody.
Crazy, man.
Nobody giving her a shot. In straight sets, by the way, takes down Andrea there at 6-7, 6-6, and 6-3. And going on out here behind us, Yannick Sinner is up 2-0 and up a break in the third set. So it looks like he is going to be moving on.
I got to get on that Boisson shoulder routine, man. Whatever she's doing at the gym is working, man.
I mean, how happy are they right now over there? They got their own in the semis. They were popping the champagne.
Yeah.
Eating the croissants. Celebratory crepes.
And what, Coco's next, right? The chance to take down an American, too? Oh, man, it's got to be exciting.
It's
got to
be great for them.
It's a party.
All right, let's get to our G-Bank best bets. A few for me here. And by the way, we do have morning for us, afternoon for you guys, but we do have some morning baseball for us out here on the West Coast. Rockies and Marlins are going to be going. By the way, that is going to start pretty much right when JVT and Stormy come on. That's going to be about 10 minutes after that. So if you want to get a bet in for that game, minus 162 on the Marlins, plus 136 for the Rockies, who, by the way, have won their first series of the season. So golf clap there for the Rockies.
Way to go, Rockies.
About a half hour after that, first pitch in Cincinnati between the Brewers and the Reds, DL Hall versus Andrew Abbott. This is out to minus 135. Look at me getting the big money there, Kay. Look at me getting the CLV, as they say.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, the CLV on the Reds. I like Andrew Abbott a lot. I've been betting Andrew Abbott a ton. And this is a dude that's going to go out and he's going to give you most likely a quality start here. Now, the one thing I will say, sometimes these day games are wonky. It gets these guys off their schedule. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like they're used to, when you're a pitcher specifically, kind of like you get regimented, right? It's like, okay, I'll wake up and I go and do like a mild little workout and then I do this and then I take a nap and then I warm up and do the stretch and the whatever. You don't have time to do that, right? In this, like, so that's the only thing maybe that could throw this thing off, but I do like the Reds here a good bit today. Also backing the Phillies as well. I'm taking the strikeout prop on Andrew Abbott as well.
Like it. I like it. I have added nothing for me today, right? Yeah, no, nothing for me today, except for a losing live tennis bet early this morning. I should stop.
By the way, that 38.5 under hit yesterday.
I saw that, man.
Half a game. I ran so pure. Like, I mean, I needed a 6-2 or better final set, and I got it. Like, I mean, that is running so pure.
That was perfect for you, for Gil, for Drew, for Zach. Mean, I know they were all
so pure on that. Oh, so great.
All right, this is what we got for the NBA Finals so far. Game one tomorrow night. I laid the 9 with the Thunder. As you pointed out, we are mainly seeing the 9s disappear out there. So if you are interested in the Thunder side, I was actually a little surprised this took this long, Matt, for us to kind of, especially when you're hearing and seeing all the Thunder love, that we didn't see that game one number really get out a bit further. The 9.5 making a little bit more sense to me now where we're at. Did lay 9. I brought this up yesterday. Played 13.5 at plus 165. I mean, you got to be a little careful with these. I wouldn't take these out. And personally, I don't like to go out to more than like 16. When you're looking at these alts, 15.5, 16, that's kind of my cutoff point. Just when you see these 20-point leads and what can happen at the end, that's kind of my cutoff point. I probably won't add anything else to that, but not laying 9 and 13.5.
I like the, I like the thought process behind it, which is like, listen, if you're willing to lay 9, that's like a butt kicking as it is anyway. So then the fourth quarter, the last 2.5 minutes, last 3 minutes of that fourth quarter could get really wonky and get you there for sure. Yeah.
Yep. And then a couple other NBA Finals bets for me. Lou Dort to lead the series in 3-pointers made. We talked a little bit about that earlier. That is at 6-1. And then we just talked about it with JVT. I am with him on SGA to lead the series in assists. I didn't get quite as good a number as him, 4-1 on that. And then you know what, Matt? After our discussion yesterday about MVP, I did went out there and bet it. Matthew Stafford, I saw a 40.
There you go, baby.
45-1 here in town. Sign me up, man. I'm in. 45-1 on Matthew Stafford MVP.
I love it. It's a good discussion. I'm glad we had it. Chris Felica joined us as well. We got journalism over there in the Belmont from him, and I wasn't going to let him go without talking some college football. And over in that Heisman market, guys, if you haven't looked, a guy that we've seen a very, very small sample size from in Arch Manning. Yes, he has the last name of Manning. We have not seen him play on the field very much. He is your favorite, and which is pretty good for if you want anybody else because he's sucking up a lot of the money out there. So he took Carson Beck, change of scenery, heading down to Miami, getting out of Georgia, and, healthy as well. One of the things that he pointed out, Beck was hurt last year. A lot of his guys didn't pick him up either. And so back at 25-1 on the Heisman market.
I just want to point out real quick, there is 2-1 right now on journalism at, over at Caesars. Chris did kind of sign off on that as being a good price to bet if you want to bet the fixed odds.
$500 trifecta from GBank First Bet and VEASAN. Open up a GBank Visa Signature credit card in the first 90 days. Deposit and play through $1,000 at First Bet to trigger the $500 trifecta. $200 in cash back on your GBank Visa Signature credit card. First Bet will give you a $100 deposit match as well. And then VEASAN is going to round things out with a VEASAN Pro subscription. Head to VEASAN.com/GBank. That is VSIN.com/GBank. One-time promotion limited to customers opening a new account. You cannot convert existing accounts. Terms and conditions do apply. Stick around. JVT and Stormy are next.